Yakima slogged through snow-weighted pinyons and buried Bramble a couple of hundred yards behind Ekdahl's place. He hunkered down behind a boulder at the top of the ridge. He doffed his hat, dropped it into the snow beside him, and edged a look around the boulder's right side. On the other side of the bluff lay a broad creek bed. Apparently there'd been a small mining community here at one time, as there were three cabins and a large tailing pile on the slope above them, with a 100-foot long tom stretching down the slope and into the wash. The long tom was mostly covered in snow, but Yakima could make out the line of the long series of sluice boxes beneath the sugary covering. The air was so quiet, with only the hushed whisper of the light snow falling and landing in the drifts around him, that Yakima could make out the muffled voices emanating from the shack. Yakima looked around. The men probably had horses out here somewhere. If they were holding up here, they'd want their horses near. He grabbed his rifle, then made his way along a ridge until he was directly behind the windowless shack. There was a small, dilapidated stable back here, and he could see two horses milling about inside. He felt fortunate that at least one window of the shack still bore its shutters, the rear one. The shutters were closed, which should increase his chance of approaching the shack without being seen, as long as the horses, both staring toward him and flicking their ears, didn't give him away. Slowly, taking his rifle in one hand, he made his way down the snowy slope. The footing was slippery beneath the sugary snow. He passed a dilapidated privy, then pressed a shoulder against the shack's rear wall, canting his head to listen. Nothing. He pulled away from the wall and took one step forward before he heard a rasp behind him. He just turned his head in time to see the shutter fly out from the window, from which a rifle barrel jutted like the tongue of a giant striking snake. A face appeared above him behind the barrel, round and red, with blue eyes wide and wild behind round steel-framed spectacles. Yakima threw himself back against the rear of the cabin. The slug puffed snow about a foot in front of where his feet had been. Yakima pushed off the wall, pivoting toward the cabin and raising his Winchester while thumbing the hammer back.
Oh, shit!
The shooter jerked his head back behind the wall. Yakima's slug chewed a large dogget of splinters from the window casing and missed the shooter's face by a hairbreadth. Yakima pivoted to his left. A man appeared off the cabin's rear corner. The tall, black-bearded man with a bullet-crowned hat and wearing a brown Mackinaw, whom Yakima had seen in the woods. He held a carbine in his hands. He stretched his lips back from his teeth in an angry grimace and swung the carbine down, thumbing the hammer back. Yakima was ready for him. The man dropped the rifle and, grabbing his bloody left cheek with both hands, twisted around and staggered off through the snow. Yakima ran around the cabin to the front. He didn't pause as he bolted around the front corner. He dove through the open door while casting a concentrated gaze into the room before him. The bespectacled man was standing, crouched over a Spencer repeater to the left of the rear window, an anxious look on his haggard face sporting several days of beard stubble beside a thin, tobacco-stained goatee. Yakima had hit the floor on his forearms, his yellow boy already taking hasty aim. He drilled the haggard man with the Spencer through the center of his quilted deerskin coat. The man dropped his rifle and clutched his chest where blood began to form a large dark brown stain. His knees hit the dirt floor and he fell forward on his face. Yakima stood, seeing the other man through the window in the east wall of the shack. The man was on his knees, facing away from Yakima, and spitting blood into the snow beneath him. Yakima raised his rifle, planted the stock on his shell belt, and strode out of the shack. Yakima stopped 10 feet away from the bearded man on his knees. He wore a brown plaid coat and a red neckerchief. He had longish, greasy hair. His thick black beard was blood-matted. He turned his pocked red-brown face toward Yakima, brown eyes pain-racked and bright with fury. He gritted his large yellow teeth beneath the axe-handle-sized nose that Yakima had seen on the eastern pass just before the other man had laid him out with a pistol butt.
You shot me in the face, you dog-eating son of a bitch!
You want another one?
The angry spark in the man's eyes dulled. Clamping a bare hand over his bloody left cheek, he looked at the repeater the half-breed was aiming at a downward slant from his right hip.
Where is it?
Where's what?
You know what.
Yakima took one step forward, thrusting his Winchester barrel at the man's right cheek in mute menace. The man studied Yakima for a time. Blood dribbled between his thick fingers and down his knuckles and into the dark hairs on his wrist, thinning and branching out as it continued into his coat sleeve.
If you mean that loot, we didn't get it. We was too late.
Yakima stepped back.
Get up and get inside.
The man stood, keeping his hand pressed against his cheek.
And we didn't kill Burkholder neither. We found him that way, Pink and me.
Yakima followed the man into the cabin. The man stopped just inside the door, staring at his friend, Pink, who lay face down on the floor in a pool of his own blood.
What's your name?
Jordan Tyree.
Yakima rammed the butt of his yellow boy into the man's solar plexus. Tyree dropped to his knees with a thud. He hung his head low, his long, stringy hair hanging down over the crown of his skull to the floor.
Why? You savage son of a bitch!
I was just trying to refresh your memory, Tyree.
Oh, Christ. I just told you the truth. Like I said, we got there too late. We were standing out on the far side of the jailhouse, waiting for Burkholder to open the door. The marshal walks up from the side street and mounts his porch. The jailhouse door opens, and a shotgun blasts him back down the steps.
Yakima slid his eyes around the room. He'd forgotten that Burkholder, like Darling, had been killed with a shotgun. There was no shotgun in the cabin. That didn't mean these two didn't have one, but it gave the man's story some credibility.
You must have seen who shot him then.
I seen him walk out of the office with the saddlebags draped over his shoulder, carrying a shotgun. It was dark and there was a light behind him. Me and Pink didn't hang around there long. We wanted nothing to do with killing a lawman. All I saw was a man, about my size, a little shorter, and a heavy coat and a hat. He moved off down the porch steps, and me and Pink waited to see which way he was headed. Then we lit straight out across the street in that vacant lot.
Which way did the killer head?
He turned left when he left the office. Sort of slunk around the building, staying close to it, so his shadow would blend in with the dark wall, I reckon. I didn't pay much attention after he left the porch.
Why'd you shoot at me?
Tyree stared in mute exasperation at Yakima for a moment.
Cause you was coming after us! And for all we knew, you was the killer. Figure you spotted us and wanted to hush us up about the marshal's killing.
Yakima said nothing. He'd heard the man's story and he believed it. He didn't want to believe it, but he did. It kept everything complicated.
You mind if I get up? Get a shot of whiskey? You done did a nice job on my cheek.
Yakima lowered the yellow boy and stepped back. He looked around the cabin once more, wanting to see some clue here that might implicate Tyree and his dead partner in the murders and thievery. But he saw nothing. Likely just a pair of stupid grubline-riding saddle tramps who were only a little more desperate than most everyone else in Dead River. Yakima headed for the shack's door.
Do yourself a favor, Tyree. Stay out of my sight, and if I do see you again, it had better not be with a gun.
Yakima turned and walked out of the shack.
If I stay out here alone, I'll freeze to death. I'm out of wood. This cheek is grieving me bad.